Hello, friends. Welcome to the Joyful Courage Podcast, a place where we tease apart what it means to be a conscious parent and a conscious human on the wild ride of parenting teenagers. I am your host, Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline lead trainer. Yes, that's new and exciting. I'm a positive discipline lead trainer, parent coach, and mama walking the path right next to you as I imperfectly raise my own two teens. Joyful Courage is all about grit, growth on the parenting journey, relationships that provide a sense of connection and meaning, as well as influential tools that support everyone in being their best selves. As you listen in on today's show, pay attention to how grit shows up in the conversation. Also, if you're not already on my email list, now is the perfect time to join. I pop into my subscribers' inbox with stories, podcast news, and offers every week. My hope is to make you laugh a little, or at least relate to what I have to share, and keep you updated on all the Joyful Courage goodness. If you're into it, go to joyfulcourage.com/email and sign up. Signing up right now will get you the 7 tips for connecting with your teens. I'll share with you 7 tips over 7 days that, if you put them into practice, will make a difference in your relationship with your kids. Each day you'll get an action step and a bonus step if you're feeling like an overachiever. Again, that's joyfulcourage.com/email. Sign up and stay more connected. Thank you so much for listening. I am deeply honored to lead you, so grateful to hear that what I put out matters to you, and so excited to keep it coming. If you love this show, please take a screenshot and share it on your social media. Let your friends know you're listening and find value in the podcast. Tag me and I will reshare it in my media channels as well. All right, enjoy the show. Hello, listeners. My guest today is Sarah McLaughlin. Sarah is a social worker, parent educator, and author of the award-winning best-selling book, What Not to Say, Tools for Talking with Your Children. She is a writer, trainer, and content expert for 0-3, a national nonprofit dedicated to ensuring that all babies and toddlers have a strong start in life. Sarah maintains a blog, writes the Parenting Toolbox column for Portland, Maine's Parent and Family, and has been featured many places online, including the Huffington Post and this podcast. You'll remember Sarah from episode 20 and 52.
30.
I know, 20. Did I say 20? Did I
you
say
said,
30 before?
You said 30 before.
Thank God.
That's why I interrupted you. So you can do it again.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I'm not doing it again. I think listeners need to know they are not the only ones with pandemic brain.
You're so
okay.
Smart. I love it. You told me 30 and I wrote it down, but maybe I got it wrong. Who
knows? Listen, we like to keep it real here. Oh, her latest book is called Raising Humans with Heart and is a loving and valuable resource for moms, dads, and caregivers everywhere. This is what we're talking about today. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Casey. Hi.
Hi.
I love it. We're keeping it so real.
Yes. And listeners, you need to know that Sarah and I are for sure sisters from another mister, because every time we talk to each other, we're like, oh my gosh, we might have been at some places at the same time in our youth. Mm-hmm. We haven't tracked it all down yet. But anyway, so glad that you're back.
Thanks.
So glad that you're here. Tell us about your new book, your new baby.
My new baby. I know. It was a 2-year gestation. So 2 years ago, I actually did some crowdfunding through an online digital agency to launch this book. I hadn't written it yet. And so the pandemic was just really a very perfect opportunity for me to have to stay home and get this book written. So I was inspired by the quote from Jeri Paul, who is actually one of 0-3's founding board members, which is where I work now. The quote is, how you are is as important as what you do. And that just really grabbed me. And I couldn't like get it out of my head. And I thought it applied to parenting so much. You know, it's used in the workplace too. You know, it's a really nice thing to think about in the workplace. But as far as your parenting, I just kept coming back to, you know, there's a E.B. Du Bois quote that, you know, children might not learn from what you teach them, but they always learn from what you are, which is a very similar quote. And I just kept thinking about, no matter what kind of technique or, you know, tool or tip you're trying to put into practice with your kids, the who you are, the like what's going on in your own body and how you're feeling about yourself is impacting your relationship with your kids. Mm-hmm. And just kind of wanted to write something. Again, I love to write short books, short and sweet, and just something that would help reassure parents that if you're worried that you think you might be messing it up, you're probably doing just fine because you're thinking about it. It's in your consciousness. And, you know, I also share some stories of the kind of keeping it real moments from my own child when he was younger with his permission, and just wanted to help parents, you know, feel supported in the work that they're doing.
Yeah. How old is your boy?
He just turned 13.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club.
Thank you. I'm very, very excited to be welcome to the club. And it's very humbling. Parenting has been, you know, a humbling ride the whole way, but I'm sure that we're here again.
Yeah. I love those, both those quotes as well. And I think about it in terms of, it's not what we do, it's how we be, right?
Mm-hmm.
How we be.
Yeah.
And when I think about teenagers, which, like I said, welcome, mm-hmm. You know, their bullshit radar is so fine tuned. And I notice when I'm, even just last night, I was teaching a class with a group of parents of tweens and teens, and we did an activity that kind of contrasted two different ways to respond to backtalk. So the first being backtalking back, which we're all really good at, right? And the other being, you know, showing up differently, you know, kind of pushing aside the angst that we're feeling that our kids dare talk to us this way and getting really curious about like, whoa, what is going on with you? And so there was this list of statements and questions, and I really wanted to land for them. It's not necessarily that you have to say these things. It's deeper than that. It's being inside of a body that is recognizing, one, the trigger, right? Like, whoa, that bothers me to be talked to like that. And I'm not going to get hooked by that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get curious instead about what's behind it and propelling it, you know, like a freight train towards me. So that kind that reminds me. And oh my gosh, right? Like, first, yes, being aware of the fact that, whoa, that really felt very disrespectful. And recognizing that and pausing before your own disrespect comes flying out of your mouth. Easier said than done.
Well, absolutely. And what is such a beautiful thing in that moment, which is, you know, that's the thing that you and I and so many other people who do this work are trying to teach, is that if you just join them there, you're just teaching them that that's what you do. If somebody speaks disrespectfully for you, then it's okay to turn around and blast them back, right? Then that's what you're modeling. And the piece about modeling is just so, it's the, you know, I joke that it's the good news and the bad news, right? That our kids are always watching us. So it's such a beautiful thing in that moment. If you can stop and pause and take a breath and get curious. I've been talking with other people and we've been that same exact term, just like being able to pause enough to be curious about what is going on here. And for, I know your listeners are probably, you know, more parents of older kids, but for parents of younger kids too, and maybe this applies for older kids too, to say out loud your process if this is new for you.
Yeah.
Because if you can pull off getting that pause in and getting that curiosity going without having to like coach yourself through it, then you're doing great. Because I still am like literally saying out loud, wow, that is a really hard tone to hear. I'm going to take a deep breath before I say anything back. And sometimes I'll even say that like, what I want to do is be nasty back, or I feel like punishing you right now, which is something I don't do. So I'm going to just take a breath because that's not where I want to go. And that's all great modeling too, because it's hard, right? And it illustrates how hard it is, because I'm decades older than him and I'm still struggling to do it, right? Like my brain is fully formed and I have a level of maturity that he doesn't have. And I am personally still struggling. And so I feel like that helps me have compassion and bring empathy and curiosity to my child's behavior too. Like, cause then I remember, oh yeah, he has a 13-year-old brain. And then I think about some of my behavior and choices that I've made at 13. And it's like, oh yeah, this makes totally perfect sense.
Right.
Not a surprise. Yeah. Not, it shouldn't be a surprise. But it catches us off guard because they were so sweet sometimes and they can still be so sweet. And then all of a sudden they're not. And you're like, whoa, what just happened?
Right. It's like a personal affront. Like,
right.
Hey, everybody. Listen, I'm so excited to give you an update on Songfinch. Songfinch delivers. I shared last month that I was going to have them create an original song for Ian, my graduating senior. Well, the song is done, and the process of co-creating it with the artist on Songfinch was so cool. I got to provide details and ideas, and then the musician of my choice wrote up the lyrics, put it to the music that I picked, and the results are so cool. I can't wait to surprise Ian with it. I will be sure to record it and share it with all of you. Songfinch is an innovative service that lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and it lasts forever. After moving through their process, you get the final results in 4 to 7 days. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free. So you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care. Start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. Go to songfinch.com/joyful and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, which is a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/joyful. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/joyful. Hey friends, as a podcast listener myself, I always get so excited to share when I find a new show that I think is super useful. So today I want to tell you about Understood Explains. This is a podcast that tackles one important topic per season. And this season is all about navigating individualized education plans and is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube. Getting the support our kids need in school can feel tricky, and we aren't always sure what it is that they need. When I listened to the episode titled, Does My Child Need an IEP? It offered up so much useful information that I could really see supporting parents who are in this consideration. The host is so knowledgeable and really breaks down the content in a way that helps listener go from completely overwhelmed to actually starting to feel empowered. Other episodes in the series highlight the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, as well as a whole episode that busts common myths about special education. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Understood Explains. So check it out. You won't be sorry.
And I get that. I get that. I get that wave of, you know, and it's so funny because like last night we're going through this, you know, the first round is this list of like, how dare you talk to me like that? Do you need to go to military school? Which I've never actually said that, but I definitely have been like, I can't believe you're talking to me like this. Like, what did I do for you earlier today? So much of the first round, everybody's like, ooh, kind of cringing because it's like, oh yeah. I'm familiar with that language and then learning how to shift. And I love what you said about speak it out loud. I absolutely think that it's probably, I mean, it's equally, if not more important for our teenagers to hear us say like, okay, I'm feeling all the feels right now. So I'm going to take care of myself and let's come back to this conversation when we're both, you know, feeling regulated. I think absolutely we need to not only model it, but speak it. I also think like sometimes if we're, you know, like I told my class last night, if this is a drastic shift from your parenting style, let your kids in on your work, you know,
yeah,
let them know, like I have been kind of a dictator and I'm realizing it's made an impact on our relationship and I'm going to be trying new things and it might be kind of weird to you, but just roll with it. You
know? Yeah, I know. I tell people to say that to their younger kids. You know, I learned some new things about the brain that I didn't know. And some of the things that we've been doing in our home aren't helping. And I didn't know that. And now I do. So I'm going to be trying to do things differently. But I think that's legitimate for a 5-year-old or a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Because we're always learning.
Yeah.
Yes. And what great modeling too. Like, I don't know everything. Hello.
Right. They already think that. So
they totally already think that. Yeah.
So really what you're talking about is an invitation for personal growth and responsibility. Yeah,
it really is, because one of my chapters is called "The Most Important Relationship You Have is with Yourself."
I talk about that.
Yeah. Because I feel like it's how we are with ourselves and how we are in our own bodies. And if we're able to even connect with the present moment, or are we spinning in our head with our to-do list? Like, there's so many things about our own relationship with ourselves. Are we, when we maybe don't catch ourselves in pause and we yell back, are we then not able to apply any kind of like self-compassion or self-forgiveness? And then we're spinning out about guilting ourselves for the rest of the day. Like, all of these habits and patterns that we all have, because we're imperfect growing humans, they impact the way that we interact with anybody, but most specifically our family members. And so the other thing I talk about is the subtitle of my book is not a how-to manual. And so I talk about how we all come to parenting with a manual in our pocket that we may or may not be aware of. And that's the parenting we received, because everybody on the planet, you know, hopefully got some sort of parenting, good, bad, or ugly, right? We got parented in some way. And that is our template. That is what is guiding us, unless we bring awareness, consciousness, exploration, curiosity to that manual and kind of dust it off and do some editing, right? Like, if it's a metaphorical book and that's what's driving your knee-jerk responses of how dare you talk to me that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's,
I never would have been able to say that to my parents. Oh, like, yeah, that's like, you know, like, oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so dusting that off and taking a look and seeing what needs to be adjusted. And sometimes, you know, there's this piece about we want to raise kids who are going to be outspoken and independent and confident, but not right now, not in my face, not when I want you to empty the dishwasher without arguing with me about it, right? Like, and the maturity, knowing that the maturity will come later, I think it's like the messy middle where they are experimenting with a freedom, right? Like, we can't make them anymore. Like, we used to physically be able to make them. And if that's the kind of parenting that you were relying on when they were little, this is what I tell parents of toddlers, don't do that now, because it's got an expiration date, let me tell you, because we can't make them, right? And then we have to figure out how to navigate that. And there's just a lot of trust involved there too. And I feel like the relationship, if you're focusing on the relationship and the connection, then you're going to get there, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, being cognizant of the modeling that you're providing. We want them to learn how to be all of those wonderful, confident things, but we also want them to have relationship skills. And that gets practiced at home too, that conflict resolution and all of that good stuff.
Yeah. There's so many layers. It's so scaffolded. And I remember when things got really hard for me, I have a friend whose older kids are a few years ahead of my oldest. And I remember going to her so distraught. She happens to be a Reiki energy worker. So I was like on the table, like, what's happening right now? Help me. And she said, you know, Case, it seems like 14, 15, really hard years, 16, 17, 18, they tend to come back around to you. And I just remember laying there with a 14-year-old who was in crisis and feeling like, well, thanks. And, you know, it doesn't really serve me right now.
It's really a long time.
Yeah. And now I'm finding myself supporting. I have this whole beautiful community, my membership community, and there's a little group of mamas of 15-year-old daughters who are, and I'm just perfect. Like, ladies, like, just know this is temporary. And like what you were just saying, trusting that experience and maturity is going to land.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to like really, but maybe what if it doesn't for my kid? It's like, no, this is for every kid. Like, they will mature. It will shift and change. And yes, like, if we can maintain the relationship, then regardless of what kind of mischief and havoc shows up in those hard years, like they're going to get to the other side with more skills than we could have even appreciated. Absolutely. In the moment, right? The important skills, right?
Yeah.
Maybe sure. Not like a 4.0, maybe with some like war wounds along the way, hopefully none that are too deep or painful, of course, but you know, all of that mm-hmm. is, this was something that I said to a parent last night, like who was really worried about his child having any regrets. And I said, hey, listen, first of all, we all have regrets. Second of all, our regrets are what inform and inspire totally. Us in the next stage of life. So yeah. You could magically eliminate regrets. You're not really doing a service to your kids. And I don't know if he was really mm-hmm. buying it, but.
Well, yeah, it's true. But all of those, it's so two things come to mind. One is that part of this is a boundaries issue that mm-hmm. we have to step back a little bit and let our kids fail, let our kids yeah. have regrets, let them make mistakes. A parenting class I used to teach years ago, it was the thing we said at the end of every class, mistakes are the primary learning tool for humans. Like there's no,
like really people say it again, Sarah,
literally
say it for the people in the back.
Mistakes are the primary tool for learning tool for humans. No matter how much we want to get in there and smooth the way and fix it or make sure they're equipped with all the skills and know about all the pitfalls. Like it just doesn't work that way. We can't, but that's, and seeing that that is so that we can avoid our own pain. That's where the boundary piece comes in, is that those feelings are ours, right? Because these are our children and we become so attached / maybe a little bit enmeshed, not everybody, but
oh some, yeah.
That there's that the not having that boundary in the right place is the difference between being involved and supportive and being like enmeshed and emotionally bound up and codependent in your child's behavior and choices, because they are going to grow up and be adults who have their own lives. And that's what's supposed to happen. And that's an inherent grief in parenting, right? Like, and having the emotional competence to be able to recognize that and do like, I, you know, to kind of do a little pre-work. One of the things that I did for this book is I wanted it to be really just for anybody. Like if you have a 2-year-old or a, you know, 19-year-old, 18-year-old, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, the stories are mostly about when my son was young, because, you know, they get to be a certain age. They don't want you telling stories about them anymore, which is totally fine.
Shout out to Rowan, who lets me talk about her all the time. Thank you, Rowan.
I know. Yeah. No, mine is like, messed. I can't even post his picture anymore. Maybe he'll change his mind, but yes, total. Thank you, Rowan. I absolutely appreciate that as well. So I reached out to a bunch of friends whose kids had left home, and I got some really lovely responses. And my one friend, she wrote something particularly beautiful, and she let me put it in the book. And I'm so grateful, because it really did. I think it's helpful to know what's coming, right? Like even though your friend, when she was giving you Reiki and telling you like, it'll all be better, you know, because this is a developmental phase, right? That's part of the thing, is that if we don't know it's just a phase, we're freaking out.
Yeah.
And then maybe we had a different kind of temperament as a teenager, and so it feels really foreign. You know, some of my child's behavior, I can look at and be like, oh yeah, I remember this. And some of it I'm like, huh, because they're growing up in a totally different time than we did. Right. So
yeah,
it's not ever going to be the same, but any times that you can kind of relate. And then I feel like there's no way to like pre-process the grief, but that there's little griefs that come as they grow and get bigger and move slowly away from us. And I feel like that's part of my job as this parent, is to stay current with my own emotional process. And that's that piece of having a good relationship with myself.
Yeah.
And having that self-awareness so that I can be, I want our relationship to be good. And I can only have that if I'm paying attention to my side of the street.
Yeah. And I think like when you were talking about enmeshment, I mean, when we were in our toughest season with Roey, mm-hmm. I knew that I was enmeshed. I knew that it was, I like that my attachment was not a healthy, like it was so hard for me to create space between the experience that she was having and my experience of it. And so I just want to say to anybody that's listening, who you know, is having a child, especially our kids that are really kind of the outliers, who mm-hmm. are really you know, struggling with mental health and just having such a hard time. I just want to say that I see you and I love you. And, you know, a mantra that I really appreciate is that a friend of mine said to me one day in passing that has just like landed and continues to land is being fiercely committed and lovingly detached.
Yep.
And it's really like, it's a great mantra and trying to, like, what does that feel like in the body? You know, like trying to really, and this is like literally my question to myself, like what does that feel like? Cause there's no doubt that I'm fiercely committed to my kids' well-being that lovingly detached piece is the gold. Right? It's the gold. It's where we get out of the way and we allow for their experiences of life to create, you know, like we were talking before, to create the tension that they need to move forward and thrive. And man, it's really hard. And that's personal growth, right? That's where we get to check in on, okay, what's going on? Like, where's my, yes, I want to find you a therapist. And by the way, I'm calling my own.
Yes, exactly. That's a perfect example. You know, you used the word scaffolding a minute ago, and I love that because it's like, we're not building these people, right? These people arrived and they are their own people. And we are scaffolding their growth and development because we have grown up brains and we do know some things that they don't know. And we are trying to make sure that they can kind of fall down in a semi-safe environment while their brains are growing. Until they have a fully formed prefrontal cortex, they're going to fall down.
Late 20s, everyone.
Late 20s, hello. Yeah, so sorry. That's why they won't let you rent a car until you're 25, because they know.
But they can go to war and smoke and drink anyway. Go on.
That's a whole separate issue. Yeah, but there's you know, we're providing that loving guidance. I love that I wrote that down, fiercely committed and lovingly detached.
Me too.
But you know, the scaffolding doesn't move, right? Like if you think about scaffolding on a building, or if you think about, you know, guardrails on a bridge, like they don't move in towards you to hold you, right? And it's not that we can't ever hold our kids, but if you're thinking about providing structure that is supportive and not, you know, isn't taking over, right? Like it, or smothering or whatever, we have to put our boundaries where they need to be, and then we need to leave them there, right? And not move them in because of our anxiety. If that makes sense.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That makes so much sense, because that's when we do it. Cause we're afraid. And like, listen, parents, there is plenty to be afraid of. Okay. I know there are plenty of stories out there of teen years gone awry. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for the most part, they're going to be okay. Most of them are going to be okay.
Right.
Like, and that same wise friend who gave me energy work was also, we met, she came, went through one of my classes years ago when her parent, when her kids were much younger. And one of the things that she said during our class, she's like, you know, I'm just getting this visual. Like I'm the container, like really what you just said, Sarah, I'm the container. That is my job, is to be the container. And their job is to bounce all around the container, hitting the walls, knowing where the boundaries are. And that visual, you know, shout out to Jessica, because she's the one, she's offered so much wisdom to me. Even as she came to my class, I was like, let me lay down on your table. but yeah, I just think that's so powerful. I was actually talking to my daughter about this whole conversation of, you know, regrets and wanting our kids to have all the doors open. And I'm talking to her about it compassionately, because I get it. I understand where this comes from. And she looks at me like kind of with a little bit of disgust and says, that sounds like parents want to live through their teens, Mom. And it got me thinking, and really, I mean, the practice of separating our regrets. You know, because I definitely, like, I really wish I wouldn't have partied through college, because I had some really great classes that I wish I could remember.
Right.
And I can't, because I was not there either physically or mentally.
Right.
So, you know, I definitely, there's, and plus many other things that I will not mention here on the show. So many regrets.
We're not going to do a laundry list of that, are we, Casey? We're not going to keep it that real.
But I can feel when, and Rowan, my sweet 18-year-old is really good at noticing when that kind of starts to come in for me, mm-hmm. because she'll say, I'm not you, Mom. Mm-hmm. Right. And, mm-hmm. And that's her way of reminding me, like, oh, I am letting my own experiences kind of,
we're trying to save them.
I know.
We're trying to protect them.
Please.
Like we're trying to, we're like, oh gosh, I have these regrets. So, you know, clearly I will give you my wisdom. We can't, wisdom doesn't work that way. You can't hand it off.
No.
It's not,
it's learned
through
experience.
It's not transferable.
Yes.
Wisdom is not transferable. So give it up, people. It's just not, it's not going to happen. And then the problem is the tension that that creates. And this, you know, we could apply this to toddlers too, right? Like we're anxious about their behavior. We think it's a reflection of us. And then, you know, so it's a little different, right? Like that, but the root
not really.
Cause, the root is the same, that we're afraid that it's going to be, it's going to make us look bad. If our toddler's screaming or if our child is struggling in school or whatever it is when they're older, it's still like, we're too personally invested. We're thinking that they, if they're not us, that they're a reflection of us and that it's, we're responsible somehow for their entire being, which is just not really how it works.
No, because what we're responsible for is how we respond. Like, I mean, when I think about being in the grocery store and there's a toddler going off the rails and I watch a parent who can stay connected to themselves mm-hmm. and maintain, like that is when I'm like, oh, you are onto something there, mama.
Nailing it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to, you know, now that we're kind of on the other side of Rowan's experience, I can feel some pride around like, wow. I mean, as hard as it was, and as many moments as I had where I was like, no, this cannot happen this way. This is a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I got in my stuff, you know, for the most part, I'm really grateful that I'm grateful that she was so sure of what she needed. Like there really wasn't, I mean,
good
what
luck
was the
fighting
option?
It, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, I didn't really have any other option other than like, okay, letting you take the lead here. And I'm so glad that I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, as if there was a choice
there,
but
choice, right.
Even inside of that, when I finally surrendered and was like, okay, this is what we're doing. And so then how can I show up to this narrative mm-hmm. in a way that's going to be supportive of her, even though there were, you know, three or four big red flags that were mm-hmm. terrifying along the way, you know, that I didn't have any control over.
No,
other than like
don't.
Becoming a psychopath and and then what would have happened to her? I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what you do have control over, which is something that I also talk about in my book, is the narrative. You have the power to notice that they, you even have a narrative. Like that's
yes.
one of my tips
oh my
for
God.
Self-regulation. The first thing is to like pause. If you've noticed, be able to notice that you're triggered, right? Like, which it is hard in itself. Like even just that one step is so freaking hard sometimes. And then
when you want to bite someone's head off, people, you're triggered. Okay.
Yeah. You're triggered. when you think that everybody else should be behaving differently, they're triggered. Right. But then the second piece is to notice what story then comes into your head about what just happened, because that is the narrative that is driving you and running the show for you. And most of us are not even aware that it exists.
Yeah.
So your story is this can't be happening for whatever myriad reasons. Right. And that then you have the, once you notice the story, it's just a story. It's not like, you know, don't believe everything you think. It doesn't mean it's real. It means that you now know something about yourself and how you're interpreting the situation, and that you can stop that and think about what other things could be going on. This is where the curiosity comes in. What other narratives could I entertain in this scenario? Because there's always at least one more, but there's probably tons more that you could consider that might feel, even if the other person's behavior does not change, whether they're 3 or 13 or 18, you still get to potentially feel differently because you tell yourself a different story about their behavior.
Yeah. I love the narrative conversation, especially considering I think of myself as this like really laid back, easygoing, open-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Rowan was like, I'm done with school, I'm dropping out, week 3 of junior year of high school, I realized, oh,
whoa.
I am attached to a certain narrative here that I was just like in the moment, it was the water I was swimming in. I didn't realize that that existed until she came and ripped it out of my hands. And I realized, oh, wow. And that was part of, the work for me was recognizing there are multiple narratives that can exist at once. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the whole, like, this is her. You said this earlier, like, this is her narrative. This is her journey. This is her life. And yes, I was definitely at one point thinking to myself, God, I really hope at 30, she's not like, you know what, mom, you really should have been a little bit firmer there when I wanted to drop out of high school. Like, I don't want to have that conversation,
Right.
And I've actually brought it up to her and she just rolls her eyes and she's like, mom, I am never going to say that. I'm like, okay, well, we'll see.
I'm just checking.
I still can't quite let it go. But again, that is fear of my discomfort, right?
Right, exactly.
Fear of my discomfort. Right. So, oh my gosh.
Right. And the capacity to be, if that is the case, you won't be able to do anything about it except feel how you feel about it and work
like,
through
well,
it.
You shouldn't have been so adamant. And then maybe I'm
exactly.
just kidding.
You're funny. But there's a self-trust piece there too of like, that I will be okay. Like,
yeah,
we can't protect ourselves from, and part of it is just a desire for that, right? To protect ourselves from what we might be able to kind of see coming, but we really can't. We can't, we don't know what's coming. And if the last 15 months hasn't proven that to all of us, I don't know what the heck will, like,
for real.
You know, and that, you know, we probably should just take a deep breath and be here now. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I do feel really good about how things have played out. You know, it's hindsight, you know, it's really nice to be outside of it, but so what are some tools that you offer parents around? I mean, there's the talking about like self-awareness and recognizing that you're triggered. And, you know, I talk about this too with parents. Like sometimes I recognize I'm triggered and the conversation sounds like, well, I'm really upset about this right now. And then the next thing is like, yeah. And guess what? They need to know. I don't care. I'm pissed. Mm-hmm. I want to make them feel bad too. Mm-hmm. That happens. You know?
Right.
So what are some tools that you have to help with that? And I've been talking about it as the willingness, right? Versus the willfulness, the willingness to say, ooh, my lid is starting to flip. Thank you, Dancy, for the languaging.
Yeah, absolutely.
My lid is starting to flip, or my lid is flipped.
Is flipped or just flipped.
Yeah. And I'm willing to take care of myself, especially because when you're confronted by that teenager man and toddler, but there's something really special about a teenager.
That's
maybe
very
because
special.
It's your eye to eye, or in my case, with
bigger.
My 15-year-old. You know, I'm looking up.
He's taller than you now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not quite there yet, but it's going to be weird. We're talking about how weird it's going to be. Yeah. So this is the thing where it gets really personal and you need those great listening skills and communication skills because it depends. Like, what do you need to do? It depends. It depends on what kind of person you are and how you need to cool off. It depends on what kind of person your child is and if they're going to be able to let it go and give you space, because we are not in charge of their bodies. And you can go in a closed room and say, I need some space, and then that would work. But like, being able to communicate well enough to come up with agreements when you're not triggered is really an important structure, I think, to have. Like,
absolutely.
When you flip your lid and you start, I do this thing where I start talking and I don't stop.
Sisters from another mister.
I might not be yelling, but I am not stopping talking right now.
You might be yelling with your face. That's what my kids are like. You're yelling with your face.
And another thing, yes. And I just don't stop talking because the emotion is driving my mouth.
Yeah.
And all the words come out. And I've interrupted him to say what I'm saying now a mile a minute, right?
Yeah.
Because I maybe assume something about his beat. And so it's a dance, right? Is it relationships are a dance of boundaries, of communication, of listening, and they're going to be unique. Like I only have the one child, but I live with another human and my relationship and conversations around getting triggered with my husband are different. And I'm sure, and I know 100% that anybody who has more than one child, there's not some like formula that's going to work for, you know, both of your kids. Like,
and they trigger us differently.
Personal.
Like my kids trigger me differently.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. So this is where knowing yourself and knowing what you need. And then the other piece is there's sometimes no avoiding it, so that it's really just that rupture and repair process. And that parents parents, I know, and because I have too, get so concerned about the rupture because it feels like you're breaking something, right? Because mm-hmm. you are, you're breaking your connection with your child. When you yell, when you punish, when you do those things that break connection, that's what's happening. But that doesn't mean that it's broken permanently, right? Mm-hmm. It means that there's a repair that needs to be made. There's a reconnection that needs to be made. And that can be fast depending on how people's emotions flow through them or process, or if it was a misunderstanding, right? Like maybe it's a misunderstanding and that gets sorted out in the moment. And then it's like, you know, quick apologies and you move on, but maybe it's not, maybe it's a bigger, deeper issue. And there's going to need to be space and conversations. And we need to talk about this later when I'm not feeling so heated or whatever the strategies are. Like the more you have, the better, because you'll try them out and you'll figure out which ones work in which mm-hmm. situations. But there's no formula or magic bullet to any of this interpersonal work. I know. I'm sorry.
I know. Well, no, and know. I love that sometimes when you have the rupture repair, sometimes the repair actually takes you to a new level of relationship with your kid. So,
absolutely.
You know, if we would lived a life with no rupture, I think that it, you know, there would be certain places that our relationship wouldn't be able to go to because of that lack of, I mean, it's an invitation for vulnerability. It's an Absolutely. Invitation for humility, for knowing each other at a deeper level. I love mm-hmm. repair, you know, mm-hmm, I think it's mm-hmm. so powerful.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Thank God. Spring into summer is my favorite time of year. After turning 50 last September, I've been really working on my physical health and well-being and can honestly say that I am feeling better in my body than I have felt in a very long time. Yes, credit goes to movement and working out, but even more credit goes to how I'm feeding my body. That's why I love Factor. I fuel up with Factor's no prep, no mess meals, 35 different meal choices, and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. I always have a new flavor to explore. It's amazing. You can crush your wellness goals this May. Keep time in the kitchen to a minimum and enjoy effortless support for the lifestyle you want to be living with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients you can trust from Factor. Head over to factormeals.com/joyful50 and use the code joyful50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code joyful50 at factormeals.com/joyful50. Again, that's 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Yes, yes, yes. Join me. Join me in the health revolution and feel really good this summer.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. Right. You were saying, it was making me think, you know, when kids are younger, we have this thing where like, we just don't want them melting down all the time, right? Like there's just all this crying and tantrums because they're regulatory system in their brain isn't wired. And if you don't know that, like that causes, that's the biggest problems that parents
right. Then we see character
that, right?
flaw. Right.
Right. Then we see character flaw and the parents get really controlling and freaked out about it because they're terrified. Right. But then that fear is driving their behavior to squash it. And then the kid is just like, I'm just having a big feeling because that's all I know how to do. But you know, anyway, it's the same kind of problem when you have conflict with teens, right? Like we just don't want it to be happening. But instead yeah. to just know like, that's what happens between teens and parents. Like that's the developmental thing. They're supposed to push up against us and pull away from us and be like, I'm going to be my own person. Yes, you are. And we have our own relationship. We're still living in the same home. You still don't have a fully formed brain. So the conflict is just like the telltale like sign of development for teens.
Yeah.
And it's not, and reframing it so it's not a bad thing. And like you were saying, it does really build intimacy, right? Like I used to teach crisis de-escalation at my couple of social work jobs ago. And we did this exercise where we had people write down the 10 people that they feel closest to on a sticky note, and then to circle all of the ones that they've had conflict with. And on my list of 10, I had 9 out of 10 I circled where I had conflict, like significant conflict, because it's what helps you. It's real. It's what's real,
yeah.
Right?
It's how you know that they're lifers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that piece about development, and then just about how it really is, if you see it as a relationship builder, just like, you know, tears and tantrums from a younger child, that means they trust you. That means that they know you've got them and they can show you their most troubled self. And it's a similar kind of vibe when kids are older, that it's hard to take it as a compliment, both of those behaviors, right? But it really is on some level.
Yeah. I think there's the added piece of, I hate to even say this because we could launch into another 20-minute conversation, but I'm just going to say it. there's this added piece of like time is running out.
Yes, and I think,
and I know for myself, and I've heard it from clients that I've worked with, there's this fear that if relationship is really hard right now, that that basically is a preview of the rest of their life. And man, you know, like I am living proof. My mom and I went through it from like 15 to 25, very little relationship. You too?
Yeah, not so much. It was more, it was a little shorter period, but there was it was big and messy. Very big and messy.
Man, really big and messy and painful. And she's my number one. You know, we are closer now, and I have to give her credit too, because I think she's done a lot of her own personal growth work and willingness to be open.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that, but man, like I just, it hurts my heart, you know, to talk to moms who are so afraid that right now is an indication of forever, because it's not,
right?
It doesn't have to be. You know, it doesn't have to be.
Right. Well, and making sure that you are taking care of yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know that's so cliche, but if you are taking care of yourself, and it will...
Then you're not desperate.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get at, is there's something about the desperation of like that fear is so far reaching that it muddies the present and it makes it harder to connect, which is the exact opposite of what you want. It's like kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Oh man. I just had a couple people come to mind. I can't wait to share this show with. Oh, Sarah, we cannot wait another 200 episodes. Holy cow.
What were we thinking?
I do not know. I don't know how that happened. So great. So this show is going to go live. You'll still be in your pre-sale of your book.
So
tell us, where can people find your book? Where can they follow you? All the things.
Yes. Okay, great. So I'm on all the social media channels, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Just your name.
Just
one of them. You and the singer.
You can put it in the show notes if you
need for sure.
But I'm easy to find on Facebook. I think I'm Sarah McLaugh on Twitter, but every place else I'm Sarah McLaughlin.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's already taken. And the book is has launched, because by the time this airs, it will have launched, and you can buy it on IndieBound. And I believe that sometimes you can request it through your local bookstores, because my publisher is an independent publisher. So they should be really in tight with the independent bookstores.
Awesome.
And then you can also get it online at Amazon and Barnes and Noble.
Yay.
Thank you.
And my final question, I don't know if I asked you this, if I was asking this question the last time we recorded, but what does joyful courage mean to you?
Yeah, you did. And I have no idea what my answer was.
Great.
That doesn't matter.
might be different now that you have a 13-year-old.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'll have to go back and listen, because what comes to mind is really tied to what we have been talking about, is just sort of the bitter and the sweet of the fact that these relationships with our kids are so important to us, and that we have to be courageous to be able to let them go, because I'm going to forget whose quote it is, but they need roots and wings. And we can't keep them in a cage. We got to let them fly.
We can't. Ugh, I adore you.
Thank you
so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
thank you again for listening. And don't forget, you can get the 7 tips for connecting with your teens, as well as podcast updates and offers from Joyful Courage, plus some humorous stories straight from the trenches of my life, by joining my email list, joyfulcourage.com/email. That's joyfulcourage.com/email. Do it now so you can be even more connected to all things Joyful Courage. And be sure to follow me in all the places. I love connecting with you on social media. I try to post things that add value to your life. So find me on Instagram, find me on Facebook. And don't forget to check out the membership, right? The membership for moms of teens and tweens at joyfulcourage.com/LJC. Enrollment closes the end of July. If there were any links that I threw at you about parent education, or the membership, or the email, just know all of them are in the show notes. So check the show notes if you didn't catch the links. And friends, take a deep breath, ride it into your body, release, find ease, find your balcony seat, lifting up and out for perspective, and trust that everyone and everything is going to be okay. Big love to all of you. I'll see you next week.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.